was born blind, and then I'm going to give away the end before we get there, but Jesus heals him and brings him back to sight, gives him his sight back. And so I asked everybody, don't do this today, I asked everyone in the congregation to close their eyes for a second, and I kind of gave them this visual picture of what it might be to be born blind, and then I said, okay, everyone go ahead and open your eyes. And when I did that, there was like 5 or 6 people in our congregation, they never opened their eyes. I literally put them all to sleep. So, and there was a girl in my youth group, and her name is Courtney, and I just, as soon as I said that, I just saw her head just drop over, and I was like, oh man, that's the worst thing you could do is ask people to close their eyes, right? All right, so let's get into this, but before we do that, we've got some incredible things that we have been looking at in the book of John. We've been looking at the I am statements, we've been looking at all the things that Jesus has been doing, and really, with those I am statements, Jesus is really saying who he is. And I got the opportunity, you guys heard it a couple weeks ago, we talked about the I am statements. I got to preach that sermon at the other church, and again, reminded that Jesus really called himself God, that he just came out and said, hey, look, without me, you can do nothing, right? Now, today I'd like to do this. There's a phrase that I've written down, and it should be on your overhead. And here it is. I have a story. My story is powerful, and I must tell my story. Okay? So, let's say this together. You're going to hear this a few times. But let's say it all together, because if you walk away with only one thing, this is what I want you to understand. You ready? I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. Now that was about the lamest thing I've ever seen in my life. Let's do it together. You ready? Okay, here we go. Ready? 1, 2. I'm really, you know, drawing this out now. You guys ready? Give me one of these if you're ready. This means yes. This means no. This means I'm not paying attention at all. Leave me alone. I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. Good job. Excellent. So let's look at the text here. We're going to be in John chapter 9. We're starting in verse 1. We're going to work our way through the text, and we're going to kind of look at this, okay? Verse 9. As he passed by, he saw a man born he saw a man blind from birth, and the disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he has been born blind? Jesus answered, it was neither this man sinned nor his parents, but it was that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, again, we got Jesus and the disciples. They're walking down the trail, and as they walk down, they see this man who was born blind. And right away, we got this kind of false doctrine thing going on. You see, what the disciples believe is that there is some kind of problem in your life, if there's some kind of sickness, in this case, the man that is born blind, that if that is the case, that somebody must have done something wrong. Someone must have sinned. And they ask Jesus the question, you know, we want to understand this mystery. Who is it that sinned? We want to know, is it the guy that was born blind, or was it his parents that sinned? Right? And Jesus is going to correct their theology. He's going to say, look, it's neither one. It's neither one. It's not that one of them sinned or the other one sinned. It's that God wanted to use this thing to bring glory to himself. Okay? That's kind of what's going on here. And God is going to use that to bring glory to himself. And we're going to see that as we go along. But a couple of things, you know, there's some people in our society, in our culture, that still believe this is true. That if you're sick, you must have done something wrong. If you're sick, you got something in your life that isn't right. And I'll say this. Sometimes the things that we do, sometimes the sinful behavior that we do can lead to sickness. Like, for example, if you're an alcoholic or if you do drugs or something, those type of things can lead to you being ill and even dying early or things like that. It's not just those things, but all sorts of things. They can lead to illnesses and sickness and those type of things. But Sometimes sickness is just sickness. Sometimes we just get sick. We get sick from bacteria or viruses, or we have an accident, we get sick, those type of things. God is going to use this man's sickness to bring glory to himself. Okay? Now, yes, the question. And we're going to see that this man's been blind from birth, and it's a long time. Does that seem fair? Does it seem fair that this man has been blind for all these years because sometime in the future God's going to do something with that blindness? You know, from our perspective, it may appear that that's not fair, right? It may appear that it's not fair. But I think when we start thinking like that, we start thinking like, you know, God and us are kind of on the same level. That we share a floor with him, or we share and the reality is that God has been around a lot longer than us. He's a lot more powerful than us. He is above us. And sometimes, and then the Bible tells us that God never does anything that is wrong. He never does anything that's evil. He never even tempts us. But sometimes he uses those things in our life to bring glory to him. Now let me just give you an example of that. If someone is lost in their alcoholism, who's the best person to get them out of that alcoholism? Someone who's been through it. Someone who's found victory over that, right? That's the idea of Celebrate Recovery that's coming up. It's the idea of 12-step programs, those type of things. How about someone who has experienced, self-mutilation? Who's the best person to help someone with that situation? Someone who has been through that situation. And you know, our God is a God who wants to use every hurt and every pain to benefit his kingdom. And there is nothing that you can go through that God can't use for his own glory. Right? Step number one is to get beyond that issue and to find healing in Jesus Christ. And step number two is to use that to reach other people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay, look at verse 4 with me, John chapter 9, verse 4. Jesus is speaking. He says, "We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he said this, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and applied the clay to the eyes and said to him, "Go and wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went and washed and he came back seeing. Okay, so we got this little section. And there's a couple things that I find really exciting about this section. Some of the things that are just interesting. Now, we've been talking about Jesus for a lot of weeks. We've been talking about the I am statements. I am the light of the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life. All these I am statements, all these things that Jesus is claiming Godship. You know, in fact, he even says in chapter 8, when they ask him, he says, "I am Yahweh." You know, he says, "I am." He's talking about before Abraham, "I am." And he makes this claim to be God. And I asked you a couple weeks ago, was Jesus a liar? Was he making that stuff up? Was he a lunatic? Or is he really the Lord? And that's really the question that we're interested in. But what is even more interesting is this. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and he's talking about this man that is blind. They brought this question up. Who sinned? Was it this man or was it his parents? Jesus says, neither one. And then look at it again. If you're an underliner or something, I've underlined this in my Bible in verse 4. It says, "We must work the works of him who sent me." Now, who's speaking? Jesus, right? Jesus is, John is going to present him as Lord. He's going to present him as God. Does Jesus say, "I must work the works of him who sent me"? Does he say that? No, he doesn't say that. He says what? We. Who's he speaking to? The disciples, right? He's speaking to the disciples and say, "Hey, look, God has sent some work for us to do, and it's us that must do the work. That's interesting, isn't it? That Jesus doesn't say, and could Jesus do this by himself? Does he need the disciples to come alongside him and help him out? That's a big negatory, right? He doesn't need any help at all, but yet he includes them on the journey and on the process and in this thing. And it's going to go back to this idea of, look, I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. Okay, now that was something that we're not going to see that maybe today, but we're going to see that as we look through the Bible, that the disciples got a hold of that. That became almost a mantra to them. I've got this story. I've got to tell my story. I can't be silent anymore. I must talk about what Jesus has done in my life. Okay, and we're going to see that today in this man who is born blind. The second thing that's interesting, look in verse 6. When he had said this, he spat on the ground and he made clay of the spittle. Okay, that's a nice way to say it, isn't it? I just want you to think about this for a second. I don't want to gross you out, okay? This is Jesus' spit. It's got to be better than my spit. But it's still human spit, right? How much spit does it take to make enough clay out of dirt to cover one's eyes? Okay, think about that for a second. This could have been a pretty long process. And you could imagine as a blind man hearing someone spit on the ground and make some kind of clay out of it. And then all of a sudden you feel that on your eyeballs. You know, you must be thinking, I mean, that'd be freaky, wouldn't it? It's a little gross. Really? And yet that's what happened. Now, remember last week, we talked about Jesus and he says, I am the light of the world. And we talked about that quite a bit. We talked about what it means for Jesus to be the light. We talked about that without light, we can't see. And Jesus is making a spiritual statement here that's saying, look, without me, you can't see God. That you can only see God through me. He's also talking about this idea of light and darkness and how sometimes the Bible refers to light as the good and darkness as the bad. And Jesus is saying, look, I'm the good in the world. Again, either he's really egotistical or he's a lunatic or he's Lord. But one of the things that Jesus always does, and we're going to see this over and over, and we've already seen it a number of times, is one of the things Jesus does is he always backs up what he says. He says, I'm the light of the world. And then what does he do? He heals a blind man and shows him the light. Right? Isn't that cool? Now, the last part of this is the blind man. And look in verse 7 again. He said to him, go and wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went away and washed, and he came back seeing. Now, Jesus does a lot of the work here. In fact, he does 99.999% of the work. But the blind man does something that all people that trust in Jesus do. He exercises his faith. He exercises his faith. You see that? He got up, he walked to the pool of Siloam, and he washes. I'm going to use the word command. And he follows that command. Now, what would have happened if he would have said, you know, this is just too gross. I don't know how far away from the pool of Siloam is. I don't know if he like took two steps or if it was a longer walk. I don't know the answer to that, okay? But what if he said, I just can't make it there. I'm just going to wash off in this basin over here. Would he have come back seeing? Now, we don't know the answer to that. We don't know the answer to that. But my guess is that he probably wouldn't have. Okay? Because this is his way of showing faith. And God blesses people who step out in faith. I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. Let me ask you a question. To tell your story, you have a story, right? Would that be an exercise of your faith? Sometimes God's blessing only comes when we exercise our faith. Look with me in John chapter 9, starting in verse 8. Therefore, the neighbors who had previously seen him as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the one who used to sit and beg?" Others were saying, "This is he." Still others were saying, "No, but he is like him." He kept saying, "I'm the one." So they were saying to him, "How then were your eyes open?" He answered, "The man who is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went away and washed and received sight." And they said to him, "Where is he?" And he said, "I do not know." Okay, we got this little, this interesting little thing that's going on. This man is going to be changed so deeply and so profoundly that his neighbors and the people from his previous life don't even recognize him. Okay? By the way, that's what Jesus does in people's lives. He changes them. Not just like a little tweak. It's like a radical transformation. You see what's happening here? Some are saying, "Yeah, that's him, that's the guy." Others say, "No, that's not him. He must have had a twin brother that we didn't know about. We got him." And others, and he keeps saying, I'm the guy. I was blind for a lot of years. I was blind. Why can't you guys recognize this? I was the one that was blind." Well, they finally go, "Okay, well, I guess he was the guy that was blind. What happened to you?" "I don't know. This guy named Jesus spit on the dirt, and then he made this thing, and he put it all over my eyes." Right? Now, interesting, I kind of elaborating a little on Scripture here, but Jesus is spitting on the dirt, and he's spreading it on the eyes, and we all kind of went, "Ew." Right? Well, at least I did. The rest of you are a little holier than I am, but I... Look at his response to what has happened. Think about this for a second. In the midst of it, it's kind of like, this is kind of weird. This is kind of gross. But in verse 11, we've already read this, but look at this. He says, he made clay and he, look at the word, anointed. He anointed my eyes. You see, when Jesus gets involved, the things that may seem a little weird or a little bit gross, or maybe the things he asks us to do may not seem logical. It may not be the, you know, like the way that society does things. But when we look back on what Jesus can accomplish in our lives, it's like he anoints us. Right? All right. Turn with me, or if you're already, maybe you don't need to turn the page. Verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees the man who was formerly blind. Now it was a Sabbath, on the day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. The Pharisees also were asking him again, "How did he receive sight?" And he said to them, "He applied clay to my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees were saying, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." But others were saying, "How can a man who is a sinner perform such a sign?" And there was division among them. Okay, now the bad guys are going to step in, and we see the bad guys quite often, don't we? We see the Pharisees, they're the rule keepers, they're the ones that say, "It's got to be this way, and if it's not this way, God's not working in it, and God doesn't work on the Sabbath, and God's follower doesn't work on the Sabbath." And remember, we talked about this before. It's like there's a couple verses that say don't work on the Sabbath. It never defines what work is. And so the Pharisees had to define it, and they made their rules. And then pretty soon the man-made rules became more important than the biblical rule. Right? And so there's going to be this argument. And in the midst of it is this man born blind. Now, again, I want to show you. We've seen this before. Remember, there's a crippled man that was laying beside a pool, and Jesus says, "Do you want to walk?" And he says, "Yeah." And he, "Okay, pick up your pallet and walk." And that was another Sabbath miracle. Shame on you, Jesus. There's a Sabbath miracle, but all the Pharisees are like, they missed it. This guy's been stuck here for 38 years without being able to walk. God does something in his life, and there's a miracle, and they don't even recognize it. Right? Same thing. Jesus is going to do something in this man's life. He is going to give him sight. He is going to heal him, if you will, from his blindness. And the Pharisees, they don't rejoice. They don't say, "Great job, Jesus. This man can't be. We know he's not of God. And who are they going to attack? Jesus isn't there to attack, and so who are they going to attack? They're going to attack the one who had the miracle happen. Now, the thing with the Pharisees is they take everything overboard. They take everything overboard. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, talks about the Sabbath. It says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Deuteronomy 15, 14. But the seventh day is the Sabbath unto the Lord. In it you shall not do any work. Okay? They took that to mean that Jesus wasn't allowed to heal people on the Sabbath. Okay? How much work has Jesus done here? He spat on the ground. He made some clay. He put it on some eyes. Does that seem like work to you? If that was my job, that would be fantastic. Especially if you got paid for that kind of stuff. You know, there's not a whole lot of effort there. Maybe it is in the miracle. I don't know. I don't know what kind of things a miracle takes out of the Son of God. Okay, but Jesus saw a need, and he met that need. Now, this is going to be interesting because this is something that has never happened before. You look through the Old Testament, you'll see people that have, even to the point where people that have died have come back to life. You'll see God doing miracles. You'll see the flood of Noah. You'll see all of these things, all these miracles that God does. But one of the miracles that we've never seen in the Bible, never before John chapter 9, is a man receiving his sight, a blind man getting his sight, right? This is going to be so significant that it's going to come up again in verse 32. And when we get there, we'll talk about it a little bit. But look with me in verse 17. Verse 17, it says this. So they said to the blind man again, what do you say about him since he opened your eyes? And he said, he is a prophet. The Jews then did not believe it of him that he had been blind and received sight until they called his parents of the very one who had received his sight and questioned them saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? Then how does he see? Okay, now here we go. They're going to attack the man who was formerly blind. And they're going to, they don't want to believe who Jesus claims to be. Right? Jesus has been claiming to be the Son of God, and they are, you know, in their open-mindedness of letting everything in, they're going to be very narrow-minded. They're open to all the possibilities except the possibility that Jesus is God. And they don't have him to attack, so then they're going to start asking these questions. You weren't really born blind. There's no way. Nobody ever has healed someone who is born blind. There's no way you could have been born blind. Yeah, dude, I was born blind. I mean, that's kind of the California surfer way of saying it. But, dude, I was born blind, right? And now I have my sight. We don't believe you. Go get his mom and dad. We'll ask them. Is this the man who you claim was born blind? And what about this Jesus? What do you think about him? Look at verse 20 with me. His parents answered them and said, we know this is our son. That's good. I mean, it's good for parents to know who their kids are. And that he was born blind. But how he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself. Why are they saying this? They don't want to be associated with Jesus. Right? In fact, it tells us that in verse 22 and 23. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews already agreed that anyone confessing him to be the Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. For this reason, his parents said, he is of age. Ask him. Right? Oh boy, now we're gonna have to look at this. We're gonna have two responses to this miracle, to what Jesus is doing in people's lives. We're gonna have a response from the blind man. We're gonna have a response from the parents. Okay? We're gonna have those two responses. One of the responses is going to be based upon this idea that when God comes into your life, when Jesus saves you, you have a story. Your story is powerful. I gotta tell my story. The other one is going to be a response of fear. It's going to be a response of fear. In fact, if we look at it, the man who is formerly blind is unafraid to talk about Jesus and what Jesus has done. His parents, on the other hand, have received a wonderful gift. Remember the question? At the beginning, Jesus, who's the sinner, this man or his parents? What do you think they've heard their whole life? I mean, can you really be a sinner before you're born? Conceived in iniquity and in sin, the Bible tells us. But who do you think mostly got the blame? The parents or the son? If he would have been like, have sight for a while and then gone blind, they could have blamed him. But it probably mostly came down to the parents. Years and years and years and years. You guys sinned. You should just repent of your sin. Maybe your son won't be born blind. They've gotten this ridicule. Now all of a sudden this guy can see. Their son can see. What a wonderful gift. But when God has done this miracle in their life, what are they? Oh, we don't know. Ask him. We don't want to talk about it right now. We know the consequences, so we've already had enough ridicule for our life, so just leave us alone. Go talk to... He's of age. Right? Look at verse 24 with me. John 9:24. So a second time they called the man who had been born blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. And they answered, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I know is that though I was blind, now I can see. Okay? And before I comment about that verse, I want to give you a couple things about this idea of fear versus courage. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, Paul is speaking to Timothy, and he says, God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but of power. Right? God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but of power. All right? So when we stay afraid of things, when we stay afraid to face the challenges in our life, when we're afraid to deal with some of the things, we're not responding by the Spirit of God. We're responding by a spirit of fear. Okay? The other thing I want to tell you about, I got to dig way down for this one. Do you know that one of our core values as a church, we have, if you got one of our bulletins, one of the core values of our church, at the very bottom one is missions. Is missions. And missions, by missions we mean this, that we are committed to sharing the gospel in Oceanview, Kau, Hawaii, and around the world. Right? That is one of our goals as a church. And you're going to see this blind man, even though he doesn't know Jesus as Savior yet, he is just going to be bold with what God has done. And again, verse 24, they're questioning him. Now they're gonna ask him some like theological things. They're gonna say, hey, look, we know this guy's a sinner. We know that Jesus is you know, they've attested his power to demonic forces, they've said all this kind of thing. The guy doesn't respond with anything like that. Now look, having a response to people who have an argument against Jesus is a good thing to be able to do. But being able to tell your story neutralizes all responses. Do you know that? He said, I don't know if he's a sinner. You're claiming he's a sinner? I don't know. All I know is I was blind and now I see. That's a good place to start, isn't it? If you know Jesus as Lord and Savior, at one point you were blind. Maybe not physically, but spiritually, right? Now, let me ask you a question. Why didn't he wait till he got his master's in divinity to speak about this kind of stuff? I mean, doesn't he have to have some credentials? Doesn't he have to do some of these different types of things? Should go to 4 years of Bible school and 3 years of seminary and then, you know, get all this knowledge and have all this stuff and then maybe he could speak about Jesus? Isn't that your excuse and my excuse sometimes? You know what? I just don't know enough. If I had a little more information, I'd be able to share with people. I'd be able to talk with people about Jesus. I'd be able to tell people what's happened in my life. But I just don't have enough information. You know, maybe if I go through a few more Bible study classes, maybe if I do this or maybe if I do that. Okay, what is this man saying? Why is he speaking? He's speaking because his life has been changed. Now again, I don't want to belittle education. Look, I got, you know what 4 years of Bible school and 3 years of seminary equals? 7 year persecution, man. I mean, I've been there, right? It's a joke. 3 and 4 equals 7, 7 year persecution. It's kind of this thing in the book of Revelation. Are you guys with me? Somebody like nod your head or pretend you're awake. 7 year persecution. No, someone, oh, never mind. It's past. This man has had his life changed by Jesus. And that's all he knows, and that's all he needs to know. And that's what he's talking about. He's talking about what God has done in his life. That's a great place to start. He basically has this in his mind. I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. You know, back when I was a teenager, I used to listen to this Christian artist called Steve Taylor. And man, this is a lot of years ago. But Steve Taylor had this song. It was called I Want to Be a Clone. And basically the whole song was about this, you know, these people who give their life to Jesus, but then they don't think they can do anything because they don't know enough. And one of the lines says this, I kind of want to tell my friends and stuff about it, like, you know, talking about Jesus. And they say, what? You're still a babe. You need to grow. Give it 20 years or so. If you want to be one of his, you have to act like one of us. Right? The Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says the opposite in Romans 1:16. It says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of salvation. Right? You want power in your life? Give up your fear. Tell your story. You have a story. It's a powerful story. You're designed to tell your story. Look with me in John chapter 9, verse 26 through 29. So they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I told you already, and you do not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too, do you? They reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as to this man, we do not know. Okay, we've got this argument going on, right? And we've got Pharisees on one side, we got the blind man on the other side, formerly blind man. How much education does the formerly blind man have? Not much. Okay, maybe a little, not much. How much education do the Pharisees have? A lot. How many formerly blind men are there? One. How many Pharisees are there? We don't know, but probably a lot. Does this look like a fair fight to you? We're going to ask the question in just a second. Who won this fight? You're going to say, probably the formerly blind man. He cleans house. Well, he doesn't have this. He doesn't have that. Why does he clean house? He got Jesus. Right? By the way, if the Pharisees were really disciples of Moses, they would have known who Jesus was. Right? Sometimes we have people who have a lot of education, they know a lot of things. But because they don't know Jesus, they're blind. Look at verse 30. The man answered and said to him, "Well, here's an amazing thing, that you do not know where he is from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, he hears him. Since the beginning of time, there has never been any opening of the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sin, and you are teaching us? Get out of here." Who won this argument? Blind guy. What does he know? Just things from his experience. You think it would have been a little discouraging as a blind man? As you hear the scriptures read, as you hear people being healed, "Oh, he brought this person back to life, but he doesn't heal a blind man. He does this, but he doesn't hear a blind man. He feeds these people, but he doesn't do a blind man." And then all of a sudden, I mean, what do you think this man kind of thought? With his statement, "Hey, look, no one's ever been healed. No blind person has ever been healed." He's talking straight from his experience, isn't he? And he doesn't, you know, insult people. He just says, "Look, you guys are on my case. I've said nothing about who Jesus is. All I've said is I was blind and now I see." Right? Look at verse 35 with me. Jesus heard that they had put him out. Wherever they put him out? Of the synagogue. That was kind of the Jewish church at the time. And finding him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" Jesus is speaking there. He answered, this is the blind man, "Who is he, Lord, that I might believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and he is the one who is talking with you now." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Now look, we've got believe, believe, and believe. Whenever we see a repeating word, we know that's kind of the context, and that's important. So look in verse 35. Do you believe in the Son of Man? In verse 36, who is he that I may believe in him? In verse 38, Lord, I believe. Okay, now, interesting, there's three little words there. Lord, I, and believe. But first we have to understand what these words mean. What does believe mean? It's from the Greek word pistou. Okay, sounds like a bad word. It's not. It's a Greek word. All right? And it says, to have faith in, to entrust one's spiritual well-being, in this case, to Christ. You put your trust in Him. Okay? It means that you give. It's like if you were to take your whole life and everything about it, all your possessions, all of your experiences, all of who you are, and you were able to make that physical. Your life and everything, your talking and your actions, and you were just to, you know, maybe make it into something. To believe means to say, "I'm no longer going to carry this. I give it to you." And you give it to Jesus Christ. Right? Now, two other words in here. We understand what it means to believe, but he says, Lord. He says, Lord. What does that mean? It means that you are higher than I am. You are above me. You now control everything about me. Right? We know it's about the blind man because he uses that center word, Lord, believe. I'm the one who's doing it. You know, that's what God calls from every single one of us. You know, the world teaches that there's multiple roads to the top of the mountain. The Bible teaches that there's one way. And that's through Jesus. Now, you can get all upset about that, and you can say, well, that's not fair. What about all the Hindus? What about all the Buddhists? What about... You know, it's not amazing that there's not multiple ways. What's amazing to me is that there is a way. There is a way. And God paid a huge price. He paid for it with the blood of His Son. Right? Now look at what happens. This man gives his life to Jesus. Lord, I believe his next act is to worship. To worship. Worship is not singing, although you can worship while you're singing. But worship is our response to the person and the power of God. Now, it's our response. Okay? That sounds like doing something, doesn't it? To respond means you're going to do something. Sometimes that will come out in prayer. Sometimes it will come out in singing. Sometimes it will come out when we say, I have a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. That can be a response of worship. Right? Now, something very sacred has just happened to this blind man. God did something big in his life. But he didn't leave it at that. He responded by giving his life to Jesus. And I don't know where you are, but maybe today is the day that you need to give your life to Jesus. Look at John chapter 9, verse 39. Jesus said to him, "For judgment I came into this world, so that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Interesting, isn't it? Those who do not see will be able to see, and those who do see will not be able to see. What is Jesus saying here? Is he talking, well, let me ask you, is he talking physically or is he talking spiritually? I got a nod. I got one nod. Thank you for that nod. I appreciate it. He's talking spiritually, isn't he? He's saying, hey, look, people that don't get it, they don't understand who God is, they don't have this knowledge of God, I came so that those people will be able to see. Now, how do they see? It happens through Jesus and it happens through His Spirit. But it happens when you and I say, I've got a story. My story is powerful. I must tell my story. I don't know why God uses people, but you remember at the beginning, we must work the works of God while it is still light. He includes you and I in on this. Man, if you only get one thing, God uses people to do His works. If I'm in a position where I can't get out there and do it, I've got to deal with my issues and let God help me work through those. And once I work through those, then I move on in my life, right? Some of us have some things.